Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. December 8th, 1920, the headline splashed across the Boston Post declared, "Will not carry gun nor club." The breathless broadsheet was referring to Miss Josephine Wilder, Brookline's new female police officer, the second in town history. Now, the article goes on, quote, "Brookline's new policewoman doesn't intend to wear a uniform, nor a big shiny badge, nor carry a gun or club, nor talk officiously, but she will walk softly and carry a big stick." If I may editorialize for a second, maybe that wasn't a cliche back in 1920, but the article then adds, "She is going to make Brookline safe for femininity and, incidentally, make femininity safe for Brookline." Well, it turns out that Brookline and Boston as a whole wasn't even breaking new ground. Women were serving on other police forces across the country as early as 1845. And those women, the adventures and challenges they faced, are the inspiration for Amy Stewart's series, The Cop Sisters novels. Her latest book in that series is Lady Cop Makes Trouble. And Amy Stewart joins us now from WRNI in Providence to tell us more. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's a delight to have you. And this is such a fascinating history, and your novels bring it to life with such gusto. I'm just really excited to speak with you. So tell us a little bit about the woman at the center of Lady Cop Makes Trouble, because obviously it's not Josephine Wilder from Brookline. You look to New Jersey for your inspiration.
But, you know, it could have been Josephine Wilder from Brookline. I mean, I kind of love her. There's a picture. Our listeners can't see the picture of her, but she's pretty amazing.
She's so a serious-looking lady. I'm looking at the picture from the Boston Post right now.
She would have had to be serious to do that job. My lady cop was named Constance. Believe it or not, she was named Constance Cop, only it's K-O-P-P. And she was one of the first female deputy sheriffs in the country, certainly the first in New Jersey. And she was really unusual in that she had arrest authority. Mm-hmm. So unlike a lot of women in law enforcement at the time, Constance had a gun, a badge, handcuffs, and could chase down a criminal and put the handcuffs on him. And she did. She was incredible.
And how did you first come across her story?
You know, I was working on a book that I wrote a few years ago called The Drunken Botanist, which is about all the plants we turn into alcohol. So completely different subject. And I just randomly turned up a name of a gin smuggler and was trying to figure out what else that person had done, and stumbled into this story about the cop sisters.
Okay. Well,
By accident.
I'd love if you could read us a little bit about how you've novelized or brought their stories to life through your novels here. And because there's a passage early on in Lady Cop Makes Trouble. It's the second book in the series. I'd love you to read if you could.
Sure. Yeah, this is where Constance is actually meeting another pioneering police woman, this woman, Belle Hedison, who's Patterson's first police officer. And she's asked if Mrs. Hedison says, "Aren't you quite the mother's hen at the sheriff's department?" So Constance answers, and she says, "I hadn't thought of myself as a mother hen, but then again, I'd seen a hen peck an errant chick so sharply that she drew blood. So perhaps Mrs. Hedison was right. For the last 2 months, I'd been riding along any time a woman or a girl was caught up in some criminal matter. I'd served divorce papers to an estranged wife, investigated a charge of illegal cohabitation, chased down a girl attempting to run away on a train, put clothes on a prostitute who was found naked and half dead from opium in a card room above a tailor's shop, and sat with a mother of three while the sheriff and his men ran through the woods looking for her husband, over whose head she'd broken a bottle of brandy. The husband was returned to her, although she wouldn't let him inside until he promised, in front of the sheriff, to bring no more drink into her house. It would be no exaggeration to say that the moments I've just described were among the finest of my life. The prostitute had soiled herself and had to be washed in the card room's dingy basin, and the girl running for the train bit my arm when I caught her. And still, I assert that I had never been more content. Improbable as it may sound, I had at last found work that suited me.
That's Amy Stewart reading from her new novel, Lady Cop Makes Trouble. It's based on the life of an actual early 20th century female police officer named Constance Cop. I'm going to love saying that all day long. Amy, tell me a little bit more about, I was really taken by the end of that passage where the Constance in your book says she had found work that suited her. Do we know exactly why the real Constance Cop felt that way?
I do, actually. I know quite a bit about her. I've spent years digging into the story of these three sisters. And what I know is that Constance, for one thing, she was 35 years old. She was 6 feet tall, weighed 180 pounds. So she would have towered over most men at that time. She was a little bit of a misfit, in part because of her size, in part because she didn't want to get married. She wanted a career, but her mother had always cut her off at the pass and kept her from getting any kind of an education or getting out into the world in any way. So she was the victim of a crime and got together with the sheriff and helped to fight back against these guys that were harassing her family. And through that experience, she really found herself. It really changed her life. And she entered into a life of law enforcement that I doubt she could have imagined for herself before that moment in 1914 when that happened.
Huh. And what kind of, I mean, the passage that you read really sort of gives us a clear indication of the kinds of cases that that she was pursuing, you know, chasing down a girl attempting to run away on a train, working with prostitutes found naked and half dead. I mean, were there a lot of types of cases that she was working on that the police force felt were particularly well suited for a female officer?
Yeah, you've really nailed it. And this is what was going on all over the country, is that women were demanding, actually, to be led into law enforcement. They were saying, there are women in trouble and male officers are not equipped to deal with them. You have to let us in. They were literally kicking the doors down. So most women at that time who came into law enforcement would be given female crimes. They would oversee the women's section of the jail, rather than have male guards, and they would deal with domestic violence. They would deal with drunkenness. And also, you know, young girls were kind of going out on their own, and this was sort of a new thing that there were bars and dance halls where girls could go. So a lot of women police officers also played this protective role of watching out that young girls weren't being taken advantage of at a dance or at a saloon.
Well, you know, on that point, I'm looking at the Boston Post article from 1920 about Brookline's Josephine Wilder.
Yes.
And it's interesting because at the time, the newspaper writes that Miss Wilder has ideas of her own on how to make good at the job of policewoman. First of all, she believes that her work should be entirely among girls who are inclined to follow the primrose path and who are hesitating or on the brink. And then they quote Wilder as saying, "You have to treat each young girl as a most absorbing individual if you are to help her. The so-called case method will never work. To help a girl, first be her friend." I'm fascinated about whether or not that kind of statement or approach to policing could have happened. I mean, maybe there were some male officers at the time who felt that way, but to befriend people at risk, was that something that was particularly something that these female officers could do?
You know, this was really new, and it's so funny, that quote. Constance said something very similar about the women in the jail. She said, you know, you have to be willing to share a comb with the other inmates and sit with them and live in their world and hear their stories. This was brand new also. So there was a big debate happening in law enforcement at the time about whether jail should be purely a punitive place to be, or whether we should think about reform and think about trying to help people. I mean, it's so interesting. Here we are 100 years later, and I think we're having very similar conversations about law enforcement and incarceration.
Now, I have to ask you, though, how did male members of the police force react to having Constance Kopp amongst the ranks? I mean, she wasn't just a policewoman, as you said earlier. She was one of the first deputy sheriffs.
It was a very polarizing issue. So the sheriff who hired her was very progressive and believed strongly that women belonged in law enforcement. But many of the people, he caught a lot of flack for that. He took a lot of heat for it. And there were lots of sheriffs and police chiefs all over the country who were absolutely refusing to hire women. And in fact, laws were starting to be passed, and there was one in Massachusetts, I think around 1920, mm-hmm. that actually mandated that cities over a certain size hire at least one woman to be on their police force to so that there's some female presence dealing with the women officers. So it had to be forced on people.
Yeah. So the title of your book, Lady Cop Makes Trouble, is taken from an actual newspaper article in 1915. What kind of trouble were they referencing?
Well, this headline is sort of a mashup of a couple of headlines.
Okay.
But in this case, Constance herself, as deputy sheriff, got into a little bit of trouble. She made a mistake on her job. But there's a character who sort of jokes with her that, well, you make trouble for the criminals. And, you know, she sort of says, yeah, I know I do. So it's intended to be a little bit of a double entendre about that.
Well, you know, it suddenly occurs to me that all of this is going on, especially pre-1920, at a time when women weren't even legally allowed to vote in the United States. And yet we have the sort of dawn of as you were saying, even people police forces needing women on the force. I mean, it seems like such a contrast between what society believed women should be allowed to do versus what they weren't allowed to do.
That's right. And it's so interesting, this question of women not being allowed to vote. So in New York, the sheriff in New York City tried to hire women to be deputy sheriffs in 1912, which is really early. But he couldn't, because the law said that if you're going to be a deputy sheriff, you have to be an eligible voter in the jurisdiction where you're serving. And of course, no women were eligible voters. So they had to wait.
Yeah. You know, so can we, since we are talking to Radio Boston, I want to just ask a little bit about female police officers here in Boston, because you talked about that law a little earlier. We found an article published in the Boston Sunday Post from March 1921. I'm big into headlines today, but the headline was,
yes,
Police Woman Almost Here, Watch Your Step.
Yeah.
And that was because nine Boston women, younger than 35, they had successfully passed the test to become a policewoman, as pointed out by the Massachusetts Civil Service Department. But as I mentioned at the very, very beginning of our conversation, Boston was actually behind the rest of the country, that a lot of other cities had female officers before that. Why was Boston behind? Do we know?
I don't know. And, you know, I would say that Boston was probably somewhere in the middle. From what I've been able to tell, Boston brought police matrons into the jail in about 1883 for the first time, which was when Chicago and, you know, a few other cities were doing. So I think they were more or less in line. And I will also say about these stories in the 1920s that in many cases, local police departments had been informally employing women for some time and giving them whatever title they wanted, whatever title suited them. And sometimes those women were working for free. The expectation was, you're not going to take a salary away from a man. They weren't given a uniform. They had to come up with their own kind of uniform. So I imagine that it had been going on for a while.
Well, Amy Stewart is author of Lady Cop Makes Trouble. It's the second book in the Cop Sisters novels series. She'll be speaking in Providence tonight at Books on the Square. She'll be at the Brookline Booksmith tomorrow night, and we will have information about that at radioboston.org. And by the way, we were talking about Josephine Wilder, who was Brookline's second female police officer. We should just give honor to Ida Parker, who was the first in Brookline. Amy Stewart, it was such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Have a terrific and safe weekend, everyone. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.